Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell. Just a reminder, this podcast represents my views, not those of my employer. This podcast series is dedicated to looking at security incidents that have happened in a somewhat public manner and determining what we can learn from them. There's two incidents I want to talk about today. The first is the state of South Carolina's breach of about 3.6 million taxpayer records, and the other is NASA's loss of a laptop. So let's first talk about South Carolina. A couple of months ago, the Secret Service apparently notified the South Carolina Department of Revenue that they had become aware of a data breach. South Carolina secured services from Mandiant to perform an assessment of what happened, and that assessment has been made public. I think the caveat to keep in mind when you read these kinds of assessments is they're not only intended to be factual about the incident, but they're also somewhat intended to be sales pitches by the organization performing the investigation. Having said that, I do think what Mandiant released is pretty interesting and definitely worth a read. So as normal, the report released by the investigator is linked in the show notes, and you can find those at defensivesecurity.org. So what do we know happened in this case? Again, a couple million taxpayer records were stolen by an attacker. In the investigation, Mandiant determined that the breach appears to have occurred due to a Department of Revenue employee opening an attachment or clicking on a link that in turn installed some malware in their system. This is a fairly common tactic these days. That piece of malware apparently installed a remote access Trojan on the employee's computer, which gave the attacker access into the network and the ability to start harvesting user IDs and passwords. The attackers were able to leverage that access they gained through that employee's computer to compromise an additional 44 servers using credentials they stole. The other interesting note that Mandiant pointed out is that there were 33 unique pieces of malware used in this attack. I think that's a relevant piece of information from the perspective of trying to determine what we are trying to protect against. So the report goes on to detail, to the best that the investigators are able to determine, how the attacker worked through the Department of Revenue's network and systems and then exfiltrated large amounts of data. So what can we learn from this incident? I hope everybody takes away the most important lesson is that people are the weakest link. And I think there's a few things that chain off of that. The first is people and systems that have administrative access or access to sensitive data need to have much more rigorous controls that recognize the fact that there is not a technological silver bullet that allows people to operate risk-free. So if you let people browse the internet with impunity and read their email on a system that has access or is used by someone with access to a database that contains millions of taxpayer records, you're playing with fire. I know that's an unpopular thing because everybody will say, but Jerry, we're being told we need to let people use the internet. We are an open company. We are progressive, and we need to support that. And that's great. But you either have to come to grips with the fact that you're going to get owned and your data is going to get stolen, or you need to do something different. Along those lines, you really need to segregate your networks and systems based on risk and controls. So it doesn't make sense to have a particular network contain both systems that are tightly controlled and those that are more loosely controlled, because if an attacker gets a foothold on a system that's more tightly controlled, it's generally an easy matter, relatively speaking, from a less secure node to a more secure node. Once you have your security zones defined, it's important to figure out what kinds of policy controls to apply to each. So, for instance, you might say that any system that has the ability to connect to your sensitive applications and data are not allowed to check email or browse the internet. The next lesson is that password authentication is bad and getting worse, both from the perspective of people's ability to pick secure passwords, but also from the perspective of techniques and tools available for attackers to compromise passwords. One thing that is generally a good practice is to assume that an attacker is inside your network as you go through and decide what your security controls are going to be. And from that perspective, you have to consider that an attacker has a toehold in your network and has available to him or her the ability to sniff credentials or obtain them through methods like pass the hash or keyloggers on systems. For really vital applications and sensitive data, it really makes a lot of sense to take a look at two-factor authentication, which can help bypass some of those problems. The next lesson is that we generally have a very weak ability to detect attackers and malware that are in our networks. From a malware perspective, it's pretty well known that antivirus is only able to detect things they have signatures for or those that behave in some predictable manner. But if it's something that's not been seen before, antivirus is pretty ineffective. And that says that it makes a lot of sense to have other indicators of attacker activity inside a network. So, for instance, looking for activity that is out of the normal with respect to accessing data or applications, which might indicate someone trying to brute force a password or experimenting with access and trying to establish a layout of your network and environment. Most of those things are relatively easy to do if you have some kind of a log monitoring solution that is able to do some type of alerting, for instance, Splunk or one of its equivalents. The other half of the lessons that can be learned from this incident really aren't technical in nature, but more procedural and public relations related. I think one of the more damaging parts of this incident is how the public relations was handled. Now, the governor really wanted to come out and appear very strong against this incident, and I think that's commendable, but she was pretty unprepared to have that discussion. And so I think it's probably incumbent on our organizations to make sure before public relations people go out and have a discussion with the media that they really have a firm handle on the situation. So, for instance, the governor gave a press conference and someone had asked her a question about whether the data was encrypted or not. And I'm going to paraphrase, but essentially she said that they didn't encrypt, and that was basically they were following the best practices of the financial industry, which is inaccurate, and that encryption is very complex and involves a lot of numbers, which I suppose we can all agree is accurate, however, is a pretty dull statement. The other things that bother me really deeply about the press releases and press conferences they've had about this relate to the origin of the attack. So on numerous occasions, different spokespeople have made reference that the attackers were foreign in nature. They came from overseas IP addresses, and that because of that, this attack was different than any other attack they have experienced before. The problem I have with that is, number one, attribution is very hard. So even if the source of the attack appears to be China, that doesn't necessarily mean the attacker is in China. All it means is the last place that person hopped off of was in China. They could be in Raleigh or Washington, D.C., or anywhere else. And the other is the implication that because these people are foreign, there is nothing we can do to defend ourselves against it. And I think that is utter bunk. I hear it parroted about quite frequently, and it's generally along the lines of an advanced persistent threat. But when you get down to it, even advanced persistent threats use relatively basic block and tackling techniques to get in and move around your network. So there's really nothing spectacular about that. Fundamental good security is going to protect you against attackers, both foreign and domestic. All right, the next story is about NASA. NASA, a couple of months ago, reported having lost a laptop. Apparently, an employee had a laptop that contained some undefined amount of sensitive, personally identifiable information in his car. And that car was broken into and the laptop was stolen. As you might predict, the laptop was not encrypted, and that created a big problem. So I want to read you a quote from a news article about this. As a result of the security breach, NASA's chief information officer, Linda Kiraton, has said that with immediate effect, laptops containing information about the following topics could only leave the buildings if the relevant data was encrypted. ITAR data, data about nuclear equipment or other materials that fall under the Export Administration regulations, or information about NASA's employees. So I think this is the wrong way to think about it. An organization shouldn't be trying to apply this kind of a basic fundamental control to select systems, because you generally don't have the ability to control what kinds of data get put onto what systems. It's similar to saying, I am not going to apply antivirus to this set of workstations because nobody ever goes to a dangerous site. You just can't guarantee that's going to happen. Nor can you guarantee that a particular system that information is known to have been copied from isn't going to be stolen. So fundamentally, organizations should be adopting a stance where all workstations are encrypted by default. It's table stakes, people. You know, it's hindsight, but I think the other lesson I would say out of this is don't give the appearance that your risk management decisions are based on current incidents. The thing I picked up from this incident here is that NASA decided as a result of this loss that they would go and encrypt select workstations. And I would definitely think that an organization like NASA would hold that its data is pretty sensitive in nature and really warrants additional levels of protection against accidental disclosure like this. So my take on the lesson there is to really understand your risks and plan accordingly. So finally, in the cool stuff segment, I'm going to leave you with the SANS top 20 critical security controls list. I really think this is just an invaluable resource. Hopefully most people are already familiar with it, but this is definitely a list that every security practitioner needs to be intimately familiar with. It's a great piece of work. The link is in the show notes. Please read it. So with that, I will call it a show. I hope everyone has a great week. Remember, the website of the podcast is www.defensivesecurity.org. And I will speak to you all next week. Bye.